Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, and welcome to My Investing Story. Every single week, yes, I keep saying the same thing. My name is Ann McMillan. I am the Master Wealth Builder, helping you to build a stronger and better life with my co-host, Ione McNeil, and we are excited to bring you another My Investing Story. Ione and I are volunteers with Better Investing, which is a not-for-profit 501c3 organization. And Better Investing has helped over 5 million individual investors understand and learn how to invest in quality stocks with their investment philosophy. And as a part of this program, we're excited every week to bring you the very best in volunteers who are willing to share their investing story with you. Better Investing also provides unbiased investment education and powerful online stock analysis tools. As volunteers, as Ione and I are, we're Florida chapter for Better Investing. And so you can go to our website at betterinvesting.org to get any details about this organization. We are not stockbrokers. We are not investment advisors. We don't day trade or any of those things. We are simply just volunteers willing to bring you a story from an individual who's willing to share their investment story with all of us. So now with that being said, I want to introduce to all of you our guest for tonight, and I think that this is going to be one of the best shows. I say that all the time, but our guest tonight is none other than Mr. Nall Biggs. And to tell you a little bit about Nall, Nall is a former NFL standout drafted by the Green Bay Packers in 2000. He's going to tell you more about that part of his story, but I want you to know that after his career in athletics, Mr. Biggs is involved in numerous community activities. So we're going to hear his story. I like to say, Mr. Biggs, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we want to make this program real to all of our listeners so people understand that this information is for them. And so with that, Ione, I'm not sure who the green circle is, the phone. But anyway, Ione's going to take over from here, and we will go from there. Ione, good evening.
Good evening. Nail.
Ione, how you doing?
What's going on, man?
I'm here. I'm here.
Well, my heart is I think the word is palpitating. I do want to, before we get into it, I just want to take a quick moment of silence for everybody that's on, for Breonna Taylor and for Justice Ginsburg, because I think it's needed.
Thank you.
Okay. I hope everybody took a deep breath.
I certainly needed it. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, you know, you cheated. I'm going to start off with that. I usually don't give people a heads up when they come on the show. But before I ask you a few questions, I do want to just say thank you for your commitment to investment and financial education for youth, because how I met you is through Bob Wynn. And you were down for the Go For It event in Delray Beach 2 years ago now, I think.
Yeah, it was the beginning of 2019.
Yeah.
January.
No. Oh, okay. Yeah, the end of January.
Yeah.
It was my birthday, so that's how I can remember it. But yeah, so you know your work with that, and I also want to let the people know that you were a presence and a financial support for the students that participate in the stock market game. A lot of them have opened up their credit union with your contribution, and I wanted to make sure that many of the kids knew, you know, that there's somebody that they may have even looked up to that's supporting them in this way of thinking and being. So with that said, let's take it all the way back to the beginning. What's your earliest memory of your relationship with money or your family's relationship with money? Was it talked about in the household?
No, it was not talked about in the household. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't talked about in the household, but it was very evident that we didn't have a lot of it. You know, with the lights being turned off sometimes, water not being on sometimes. So I had symbolic references to what I didn't have. And I knew going to my friend's house, they had it. They had stuff they had. I remember one of my earliest memories was going over to my friend's house, and he had ham and in his fridge. And I don't, you know, as you can take by the name, you know, my parents were Muslim, practicing Muslims. We didn't eat pork whatsoever. So I went over there and I just wanted some ham. Like I've never had it before. So I had to have this ham that I'm not supposed to have. And why not now, since he's got it in his fridge and his parents are offering, so I'm going to take it. And I never saw an Oscar Mayer package at that point. And
wow.
So it just really kind of opened my eyes from that point. To kind
you
of
had, you had bologna that you had the well bologna is poor.
Well, we back then we had these government boxes. So you know, my mom would go downtown and get the government box. And so, you know, they didn't have no labels.
Right.
Milk,
all
powder.
Powdered
yeah,
milk.
Yeah, right.
Block of cheese you got to
right.
cut.
So we didn't really have labels, you know, unless, you know, my mom got some extra money, we would go to the store and,
I'd go
cry for some cereal or something. But for the most part, we didn't have anything with labels. So I go over to my friend's house. I have this ham sandwich, and I was sick for a week.
Your body had never had pork. Right.
And I remember being scared to tell my mom that I had a ham sandwich.
Of course.
Cause she was already mad that his parents let me have that ham sandwich without asking her and all, you know, and all that. But that was my, an early experience of seeing a label packaging, you know, and really realizing like, man, we don't have what my friend has over there. And, you know, you don't think about it growing up too much. I never really thought about it. I didn't say, hey, I'm going to go play professional football. So I never can think about having a ham sandwich again or having labels
right,
in my fridge
right.
or having food in my fridge. But I truly believe that it does play a role subconsciously, and it played a big motivating factor in how I did and why I did it, and really the work ethic that I put behind everything I do.
Wow. So yeah, that's one of the things that I mean, we can critique, you know, football and going into college and people could get upset about, you know, why the school's luring them with money and giving gifts. And it's like, if you knew where they came from,
right,
and how much not only they don't have, but everyone around them doesn't have, you know, it would be a whole different conversation. But with that being said, so you go to college and you're one of the very few that get drafted, right, to the NFL.
Yeah, that year I was that was probably one of Ohio State's lowest draft years, was that year. But I was one of the few players who left that year in draft 2000 NFL draft. I went to college being a part of, you know, one of the best college recruiting classes that year.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those guys went on to make it and become great NFL players in the league, and definitely great college players as well. But when I went to college, it was a whole different world at that point now, because I worked in high school at I grew up in South Central LA. So mm-hmm. I worked at Mel's Fish Market, and my sister hooked me up right away with a job there. So I was working through high school, and going to college, I didn't know this, but you couldn't work on a full scholarship. So going through that process where you're pretty much dependent on the school to give you whatever it is you need.
Right.
And I can't say that they didn't. I got a lot of stuff, you know, I was definitely taken care of, but there's always some extra that you want to buy. You want to go buy some shoes, or you want to, you know, buy gifts, Christmas and things like that you'd like to have. And you had no way of making any extra money to do those things. So it was kind of handicapping me a little bit in a sense, and I think it still is. But it was a different lesson altogether, because then you meet people from all over the country, from all different walks of life. Then I have my own personal journey, and I'm constantly comparing people's stories and their backgrounds and judging in my head, you know, like, oh, okay, they had some money, you know, or, oh, they can't, you know, they were in the suburb, or they got a car, a freshman, they got a, you know. So there's yeah, it's like having him all over again, right? So you kind of go through that comparison naturally, I think, just as a human condition, to compare yourself and what you had or had and what where you come from, and you kind of compare stories and backgrounds. But I met some of my best friends in college at that time, and getting coming out of L.A. to Ohio, Columbus, Ohio. My first time seeing snow fall from the sky. So that was like my first best memory that I've had there. But you learn a lot about money, but not in the way of earning it when you're in college. And I think that's one of many major hindrances to athletes who are going to college, is that they don't have the experience as a normal student to be able to go work and see what a paycheck looks like.
Earn it on their own, earn it through.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
somebody giving
having
it
something
to
pay for. You know, we go get our books, we have somebody the card, and they, yeah, okay, here you go. We've never seen a tax line. You know, we don't know what taxes come out. We don't know what 401ks, or we don't get exposed to any of that, which a student going there for an accounting degree, they're going to work, and then they're going to go home at night and study, and then go to class during the day. and they'll get a paycheck and they'll be able to balance and budget out their expenses. They'll at least, they may not do it well in college, but at least they have the experience. You know, they have the opportunity to, whereas most college athletes, but if you're full ride at a D1 school, you're not working. You're not getting exposure to taxes. You're not getting exposure to expenses and deductions and what
you know. You make a good point, because I think you're also speaking to you don't see financial effect of your choices.
Right.
You're spending,
exactly.
You know, like the other kids, their refund check, or, you know, and the fact that it could go so quick, the fact that every time you're deciding to do something or have something, it's covered.
Yep. Even our education, you know, my parents, my family didn't get a bill every year to pay for tuition. I never saw tuition. I didn't even know how much tuition was.
Exactly.
So you're very much sheltered. You're very much in a bubble. And then, you know, we say if you're fortunate enough to go make a lot of money and go to the league, but really you're going into a fortune very, very unprepared. You're not prepared for what's coming after college, to be out on your own now. There's no more college advisors telling you what classes to go to and helping you schedule your classes. You're on your own. You're grown. And not only that, your income is exponentially higher than most people that you know, other than your teammates or other or peers in around whatever league you go to. And that's when you get your first exposure to taxes at that level. And it's like you don't know what to do. You don't know how to handle it. And now you've got to depend on people. You've got to depend on someone else other than yourself to try to manage it, understand it, while you're trying to make the team and impress coaches, and you've got the pressure from media, and you're trying to go into a stadium of 60,000 people and continue to make this money.
You already promised your mom a house. And
right, yeah, and fulfilling promises that cars. Oh, man, how am I going to squeeze a car out of this, you know? And it comes with a whole other set of burdens in itself. But, you know, being exposed that late in the game to finances is a rough way to go about it. And I believe that it's setting up student athletes for failure. It sets up the future pro athletes for failure, because you have worked so hard in college. You've made the plays. Your choices are paying dividends, although not in your pocket, but they are paying dividends with your value, with your stock. And so you've done all this to get your stock up and raise value in your brand and your name, your number. And then you go and you start making a legitimate size, you know, income. You have no idea how to manage it. You don't even know how to manage the emotions that come with it. At 21, 22 years old, basketball players, they're skipping college. They're 18, 19 years old, getting, you know, these big amounts of money. They have no idea. They're not even emotionally capable of handling that size of income. And so they have to depend on it. And then that's where you hear all these stories about family members taking advantage of, you know, all this stuff. But it's kind of set up and built that way.
So one thing that I want to, and I think if I can repeat one of the things that you mentioned to me when we first met, I think you said you put all of this energy into trying to make it into the league, not realizing that you're not going to stay in the league forever, ever. You remember saying that?
Yeah.
How did you phrase it?
I don't remember exactly how I phrased it, but there's a huge misconception that when you make it, and whether it's in the league, NBA, baseball,
right,
soccer, that, doesn't
there
matter,
we go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a constant, that's something that's fixed. That is a fixed income that I will make for the rest of my days on this planet. When you're in that mindset and you've reached what you call the dream, and by many standards is the dream, since you were a kid, kids tell me now, it's 5 years old, I want to be a professional football player. It's like, okay, and then what? And
yep.
Blank face.
Yeah.
There is no answer. I have not heard one single child tell me what they're going to do after. Not one. Their parents don't even know. And so it's a big misconception that, okay, when I make it here, that's end all. That's it. It's the end game.
Exactly.
And that's
exactly.
not true. It's just the beginning. It is truly just the beginning. And understanding that earlier rather than later is pivotal in these young men's and women's lives going forward and their well-being. I mean, look at our stats. You know, there's one out of 10 or something like that or actually aren't in or filed bankruptcy or not, you know,
right.
have not
right.
spent it all or lost it all. So it's an issue. And unless mm-hmm. we become aware of it, it will continue to be an issue unless these kids are brought aware and made aware of the situation at hand.
And that's the other thing. I'm glad you rephrased it, because the other part of it is really you're living only up to 25, because by the time you make it and then leave, get injured, have to leave, you know, leave on your own volition or not, you still have, you know, probably two thirds of your life you still have to live.
Right.
And, you know, not having that foresight. So before I get into my next question, there's a question in the chat asking, did they have any kind of financial classes or training to help these student athletes manage all of this? Or later with professional teams, is it any better now?
No, in college, no. There are no, unless you're going to get your degree in finance and
exactly.
the institution is teaching you about money or economics or anything, accounting, anything that has to do with finance. If your major is not that, no, you're not getting exposed to those. And you'll have some splashes of some material put in front of you, maybe a training camp or something, but you know, you're dealing with 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. I call them kids, but they're adults. But they're not reading that, you know, much less absorbing it.
And the culture of it, too, is they're surrounded by adults that are not supporting their own independent thinking. Because easily, I'm sure if you were to ask the question, they'll be like, well, why you need to know that? Don't worry about it. We'll take
right.
care of it. Just
right.
In fact, just the other night, my dad and I had to say, yeah, let's stop talking because my blood is boiling. 60 Minutes on Sunday night did a story on the LSU football coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my dad is like, well, you know how much he makes a year, right? I was like, how much is he making a year? Homeboy makes anywhere between $7 and $9 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know how much the LSU president makes?
Oh, much less than that.
$650,000 a year.
Yeah. Much less.
So, you know, for anybody that's listening, if you don't really know the culture of collegiate football,
it's a game. It's really the culture of the game.
It is.
You know,
it is.
That started at the inception
the
of America.
Not the money game.
Mm-hmm.
The money game, because one of the things that we don't publicly talk about are the other people who are financing and investing the money. And like Ione said, trade. 60 Minutes years ago did a piece on all of the many broke athletes who lost a lot of money and a Ponzi scheme because they trusted these financial advisors, not knowing that these people did not have their best interests in heart. This is one of the reasons why we're doing these shows, to bring all walks of life and begin the conversation, because regular people like us, and we are regular people, we don't know and we're not exposed to the education, and that's why we're volunteers. We're selling nothing. We're here to provide investment education through stories like yours. So thank you for that, because, again, people don't know if we don't share.
That's true. And you know, I thank you all for doing that. I know that there's a huge benefit I say that because I'm heavily involved in a lot of community things, teaching financial literacy. But if we could see the gaps in where we're just letting this issue slide from a parental role as well, I catch myself at times assuming my kid knows something when that should not be the case. You know, we go through, I learned the hard way by playing in NFL, getting a financial advisor, and years later finding out that that is absolutely not what I should have been in or been doing. So when I hear these players like, yeah, I've invested, or I did invest, but I got burned by this, you know, financial advisor, or somebody took advantage of me. I was like, well, you weren't really investing. You were expecting someone to make you your money or do something for you that you should know. And that's a setup every time, you know, whether it's in a relationship or money or whatever. You put that power in someone else's hands, you are highly likely in a very vulnerable state to getting taken advantage of. So, yeah, there's sharks out there. But at the end of it, really, you are the one that can make that decision to do it or not to do it. You know, your signature is on that page, and you've got to be humble and accountable enough to recognize that. And we've got people that are like, I just have my money under the mattress. I'm not doing anything. All these great investment opportunities out there, now they're burned. And it's because of that bad experience, whether when they were playing or after, or maybe from what their parents told them. You know, a lot of our habits are based on our parental, you know, upbringing. And so it'll affect, you know, the outcomes of our future adulthood decisions quite a bit.
What was the pivotal point for you, though?
I was going to take them back to Green Bay.
Okay.
The pivotal point for me as far as what?
Realizing you needed to take responsibility for your own investment education and knowledge.
So it was after, and Ione, I'm coming back to Green Bay, but let me answer this. So it was after 2009, and that ironically is the same year that I learned how to invest from a mentor of mine here. A good friend of mine here in Charlotte took me under his wing and taught me how to do it yourself. Told me what equipment to buy. You got to go get a Windows laptop. You have this screen here. This is a platform you can go sign up on. Look at make sure your rates and look at the commissions. Check. He's been doing it for many years. So that was my first exposure, and soon after that, that's where I started finding the fraud and where money should have been that, and it wasn't. And I ended up having to file a lawsuit against a major financial institution because they employed these financial advisors that were advising me in such a way. That took 6 years to finally settle out of. So that, to tell you how hard that is and the headache that comes with that, should be a deterrent enough to learn your own stuff. But that was a major turning point for me. And then knowing when you're actually investing, when you're actually doing it, you learn so much more than someone telling you, than a book, than a podcast, than anything else, workshop, webinar. Do it yourself. And I tell kids all the time, do your own taxes. Sit there with your parents when they're doing their taxes. Go through it. Read what these words mean. See what the numbers are on those lines. Ask questions about what these numbers mean. Where did they come from? How did they derive? Why are you subtracting that from that? Because you learn a lot about money when you pay attention to the money that you come around or around that you may not necessarily see, but it's there. So that was really my awakening, was like 2009. It was like, whoa, okay, let's, and that was, so that was my ninth year in the NFL. That was my ninth, probably 10th year in the league before I started back-checking, like, wait a minute, okay, this much is supposed to be here. Where is it if it's not here? And started going through these piles of paper statements that I had, finally reading through them. And that is a great shame to wait that long before imagining the finances that I've made 10 years of playing, a minimum contract of whatever they were back then, $1 million a year for a veteran, going back, trying to sift through all those financial statements to figure out where'd
the money go?
Where did the money go? And why is it over here, not over here, you know, once you start educating yourself. So it was a big wake-up call for me.
And I think this show is going to be a big wake-up call for a lot of people if they really listen with their heart to what you're saying, especially parents who have kids who are going into these sports and into these leagues that don't know that they don't know after they buy the house and the car.
There's a lot that you're not seeing that's there. Especially with collegiate, especially in collegiate sports. And I say that, you know, I call it the last plantation. And I know that's a little harsh and hard for people here.
It's appropriate.
But it is the last one. And when you look at what's going on with these athletes and how much they're making these coaches that are getting paid $7, $8, $9 million a year, what they're doing with these athletes' potential and talent every week on Saturday on CBS Sports, you're watching. Athletes don't see a penny of these TV contracts. They don't get a penny of the commercial ads. They don't get any of that. But they're out there, down there, entertaining you. You know, you're watching, and the schools and the NCAA, they are killing it. So. It's something that you've got to make sure when your kids go to college, you are diligent about where they're going, how much things are, making your child aware of what's going on, who they're going to play for, understanding the financial implications of going to these places and playing at these places as well.
Yeah, it's it actually makes me think, going back to the great last plantation, I'll call it, but many don't escape. I mean, because when you think about the number of black men that play professional anything, and only on the top of my head, LeBron, and maybe a few other people, but I'm going to name LeBron because the mindset he had and the friendship he had coming in, why was he able to make the moves that he made, business moves, I mean, that he made? You know, and to me, it's like, he's almost like a unicorn.
Right.
Because the reality of it is, almost all of y'all are getting that amount of money. Of course, not as much as he got, but you have the access, but the brain power, the knowledge, the resources, the self-awareness is not there. So therefore, you're no threat. You're no threat to build wealth for yourself, for your family, for your community.
Yep. And if I told a person that they could make as much as LeBron James by not being LeBron James, nobody would believe me. But if you take what you make and you invest it wisely and you take the time to understand it, not just go in kind of emotional and you know, oh, I'm just going to start trading because I see people doing it or I want to make money. But you really take the time to understand it and how to do it. You can be wealthy. You can be very wealthy. There's people doing it all the time. But you got to take the time, but you got to be educated in that sense too. You got to be made aware that that's what you have in yourself. Now, you were born with a gift to be able to make this choice of saying, hey, look, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to be. This is what I want to have. You know, even if it's a material goal, so be it. but this is how you can get there without going out and getting hurt or injured or trying to get a Nike contract or anything like that. You can build it, and it takes a great deal of discipline and it takes a great deal of skill, but that's what you have the opportunity to do and to learn. Everyone has that opportunity to learn.
So let's go back to when you were with the Green Bay Packers and you realized that it was some older teammates that told you to go to the office and ask about this, ask about that, set up your retirement plan, right?
Yeah.
how many years were you in the league by the time you had set up this retirement plan?
So here's what I owe a lot of credit to. There are older vets. So I got drafted to the Green Bay Packers out of Ohio State. Fourth round pick. I go to Green Bay, and this is our first camp. This is rookie camp. I go there, and I'm nervous as all get out. Like, I don't know anybody except the scout who called me to tell me that I was drafted by the Green Bay Packers and scheduling. So I go there, and I'm just trying to make the team. I don't even know how. But or what position they're going to put me at, or a playbook or anything. So I'm head down, focused.
Okay, right.
These veterans, you know, the Green Bay Packers at that time in 2000, they're coming off the past 3 years before that, 96, 97, 98, 99. They had went to two Super Bowls in those 4 year spans, been to playoffs. Very, very vetted and talented football team.
Was Brett Favre there?
Brett Favre was there, yeah. Brett Favre, all these guys that you can probably remember from Super Bowl teams was there. I'm so happy I went there. This is why I call it divine timing, because everything seemed to line up for me. I was disappointed that I went in the fourth round, but I would take the fourth round over first round somewhere else any day of the week, because when I got there, the veterans that were there were leaders, like true leaders. And they made the rookies go and match the 401k thing, which was 2-1, which is probably still the case. So the Green Bay Packers, I remember sitting in my locker and them sitting next to me in the locker next to me saying, they're going to take your $17,000, or back then it's probably $12,000 or $10,000. They're going to give you $20,000. So you give them this $10,000 out of your check that you're not even going to notice. You give them that. They're going to give you $20,000 more in your account. So you'll have $30,000 in your 401k account. Back then I'm like, yeah, sounds good, but retirement, like what is that? When am I going to use it? What do those numbers mean? Just didn't know anything. And they were very adamant about having me sign up to it. I mean, literally walking me down the hallway to the financial office to do it. Right. But one of the best things that I've ever learned by coming into the NFL is not only seeing the paycheck and the by the way, it's an amazing, amazing feeling. To achieve such a dream, to be a place like that, to play in front of people and really do what you're talented and gifted to do is an absolute gift. But that is one of the major long-lasting things that I'm teaching my kids about is the time when I was made to put into this 401k. And that year on, every season I maxed out my 401k. Whatever my contribution was, I maxed out more. I was trying to find out how I could put more in.
Exactly.
And it, you know, towards the end of my career, I didn't even know. Here's a funny story. I didn't even know I had an annuity. I didn't even know I was putting into an annuity until like 2000. Like towards the end of my career, year eight, so 2008 or nine, around that time, I get this statement. I'm reading it finally from the NFL accounts, retirement account. And, you know, on the flip side of my 401k, there's another significant size number. And I'm like, man, where did this come from? You know, what is this? I didn't even know about the annuity program. So I elected into that too, which I'm so happy that I did as well. So, you know, there's these lessons that, you know, a great deal of life lessons and financial lessons that I got from my first years in Green Bay. And I'm so happy that I did, especially in a city, in a town like Green Bay, because you know, you really have a chance. You're not encumbered by a lot of noise in Green
Bay. Exactly.
Obviously.
Exactly. It's
so
not
right. You're not being distracted.
By
right. Yeah.
Miami.
So you get a lot of time to reflect, and you get time to think and actually have some quiet time to conversate with your teammates and to grow with your teammates and to learn from them. And for them to kind of groom you, and of course me growing up there, I was there for 6 years, and then I made it a point to pass along that information to the rookies behind me, so it became this cycle. So now, okay, how many players' lives did you know when you just passed that information along? How many lives did you change, you know, going back? And how many retirements did you help create?
Exactly.
How many annuities did you make people aware of? And so it's one of those really self-fulfilling, just gracious moments of my NFL career.
Excellent. Now, let's, if you don't mind, let's share with the people some of the times when the wool had to be pulled from over your eyes, or somebody came and slipped, talked you into some property you ain't never seen before, and cousin, and you know.
Ione, before y'all do that, let's just remind those that may have come on later that we're volunteers with Better Investing, and we're talking about My Investing Story with Ione McNeil and Ann McNeil, and a little information about Better Investing, again, was established in 1951 as a 501c3 not-for-profit organization. And the organization has helped over 5 million people learn really how to invest. And just regular people, just regular people who are investing $10 and $20 a month and learning how to analyze stocks and how to invest yourself. And so we just wanted to just make sure that everybody understood that we are not financial advisors. We're not recommending any kind of financial stocks or anything like that. We are just talking about a philosophy of investing, you know, a small amount of money over a long period of time, because we are long-term investors. And tonight we're talking with Nall Diggs as a part of My Investing Story. And you can read a lot about his career in athletics. Right now, he's involved in the pursuit of community and business development. Nall Diggs has served as an asset builder's director of outreach and community engagement. And actually, that's how we met Nall, through Bob Wynn. I don't know if Bob is on with us tonight. You know, we have to always give him his say. But just wanted to just make sure all of our listeners understood who we're talking to, what we're talking about, and the fact that we're volunteers with Better Investing, and just talk about My Investing Story, hashtag My Investing Story. Would love for you, if you have any questions, if you put them in the chat. We'd love to have you like and share this podcast. And so now back to you, Ione.
Go ahead, Naya.
Well, there's I don't know if everybody wants to pull this up while I'm speaking, but I ended up writing about the story I'm getting ready to share. Parts of it are from an article that got published in Sports Illustrated back in 2015. And it had to deal with, I kind of go into the college mindset, going to pro, or even not even going pro, but just getting out of college after being on a full scholarship, because now you've got to work after college with probably not as big sides of income, but you still got to understand and learn kind of on the run how to manage your finances. I go through that part, but one of my biggest scars was from buying a home and not understanding principal, loan to value, interest rates, collateral. That without understanding that, I went ahead and decided to purchase a home anyway. And, you know, there were other chances before then to learn and to find out. So it's not like this is the first time this happened, but there were other smaller investments that totally went into the dust. Who knows where the people went, never spoke to them again. It just straight got me. Like, you got me. You know, and you got to chalk that up. You got to chalk
it up. Right, right.
Say, you know, okay, yeah. I learned from that and go move forward. But one of the biggest mistakes I made was not understanding the mechanics and components of a home loan, a mortgage, or amortization. I expected people, again, to know that for me and just tell me where to sign. But, you know, putting a significant amount of money down on the home that didn't go towards the home, it went into an account where a financial institution then invested that money, kept the profits from the money, but then I was paying taxes on the account and the profit. I was paying capital gains on the money that they were using to pay their money managers and advisors and things like that. And this company, you know, when I had to go legally to settle this matter, it wasn't until 2016 or 17 is when all of that became public with this institution.
Mm.
And so at some point, you know, take 8-9 years, let's call it 7 years of that continuing to happen to other people before it got called out. And it was, you know, it was one that hurt because I trusted too much, you know, and when I think about it, it's okay. I trusted because I didn't take the matters into my own hands. I didn't take the time to even just casually understand the information that was before me while playing this game with high stakes. And so not without seeing the penalty of playing that game, that high stakes game, until after all that mess happened, through a mortgage, did it start to really click? Like, okay, we've got to make sure, me talking to myself, I'm having this self-conversation, like, okay, we got to make sure that the guys behind me don't make this same mistake. One, two, I've got to go back and talk to my younger self to make sure that I start understanding a little bit at a time throughout my life to understand what these things mean and to understand the high stakes game that's being played.
Right.
You know, we talk a little bit about Bob Wynn. You know, after I wrote the article, Bob calls me and I go and speak at the Go For It event with, you know, 60 or 80 inner city kids up in Milwaukee. And these kids have no idea, you know, what their potential is, but also the impact that they can have on their finances by not knowing anything because they're not getting taught in school. They're not getting taught at home because they don't have the finances at home to practice with or to do as an example. Like parents that say, hey, look, come here, son. Let me show you what the paycheck looks like, and this is how taxes are accounted for.
Or the network.
How much. And, right. And so it just goes kind of under the bridge. So I then made it a point to keep going back, speaking to these young kids about, hey, look, Getting there is one thing. Getting there almost, I want to say, was the easy part. I know the percentages are low, but things work out the way they're supposed to, and that takes care of itself. It's not signing the million-dollar contract that is like the whole game. It's keeping it, and understanding how to keep it is key. Not only that, when you get really tuned in, you find out how to make that $1 million pay you, so then you can reap the rewards without touching the $1 million, without the $1 million going down $1, it's continuing to pay you for as long as you want, as long as you are willing to put in the due diligence and effort. It can pay you continually. After you're done with football, you go out, you sprain your ankle in basketball, you do a dunk, and you're done. Okay, how are you gonna pay yourself? How are you gonna keep your family going? How are you gonna pay for your mortgage? How are you gonna do these things? There's no life insurance. Like, not the type that when you're dead, that's dead insurance.
Right, that is dead insurance.
There is no life insurance. You can't buy a policy and say, okay, here's your lifestyle, and we're just gonna take care of you for the rest of your life. There is none of that. You've got to take that upon yourself. And so, understanding that, and the more I spoke to young kids, even adults, and saw what we didn't know, that's when the passion really got just sometimes it's overwhelming. And
we spoke a couple weeks ago.
I was just like, it was just overflowing. I was bubbling with it because I saw how. You know, we're not playing the right game. You know, we're asking for things. And I brought this example up to Bob. I brought him up. I said, hey, Bob, we're playing spades. You know, we are playing spades. We're playing cards over here. And these people are playing Monopoly.
For real.
And I'm like, we're asking for things by playing spades when we need to be asking for things while playing Monopoly. And we're not even playing the same game. We have cards. We're sitting here with cards in our hand. And the bigger picture, they got boards. We've got hotels. They've got houses.
Cars.
And they've got cars. They've got all this stuff. They got a whole board.
An extra $200 when they go around in the round.
And it just really upset me how confused how consumed we get in our game of spades, how consumed we get in this card game.
Very much so.
When we should be, if we want the things that Monopoly is going to give us, we got to learn how to play Monopoly.
We have to, yeah.
And not knowing that, not knowing the rules or even how to get a piece to play on the board, you're spinning your wheels over here because you're sitting here with cards in your hand. And you're asking for a Monopoly piece. So we got to put the cards down and say, hey, look, this is the game we should be playing. This is the game collectively we can play. And not only that, we can create for our own selves. We can create our own stuff. If we just can put the cards down and come over here and see what the big game is, see the big picture, see what everybody's playing, see where we're going to get the things that we are in desperate need of getting. And, you know, it's one of those things that I know is a work in progress, you know, and God bless you all for volunteering for that work, because it's not easy. It's not easy to just to give someone the confidence of their self-worth.
It takes so much time.
When it's a generational, it's an inherited poverty mindset, you know, and it's something that it's almost ingrained in them from birth. And so trying to show them that, hey, no, you deserve a spot at the starting line too. You know, telling these kids that are barely eating that, no, come on, like, keep your head up. Like, you can get to the starting line, and not only get to the starting line, you can take off. Not only take off, you can win. And, you know, that takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of heart. And, you know, I appreciate what you all are doing, what you're creating, even what Better Investing has to offer. you know, now being in my own space where I you know, I call myself my own portfolio manager. People say, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. I'm a portfolio manager.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, for who? Are you one of the banks downtown? Well, no.
Not a big incorporated.
Big household trust. I don't know. Like, it's just my own stuff, you know, like, but I've taken the time and still learning, you know, and getting tips, better investing, or my mentor. I'm constantly growing. I'm never complacent and thinking like, oh yeah, I'm in a groove. Like, oh, I got this. This is cool. You know, I can do this. That's confidence. But getting, you know, arrogant is when you're like, oh, you know, I'm not even going to learn anymore. I know everything. Mm-hmm. Now I'm in trouble. You know, and so as long as I stay on that path and keep on that, then you know, I'll be happy. My family will be happy, and hopefully, I can still be an idol or an example to young kids and even adults of the things that we can accomplish.
And what you can come back from too.
And what you can come back from, absolutely.
Yeah. What I want to say before we close, I really appreciate you speaking about when you trusted and it didn't work out. Because although you are or were a professional athlete, and many people probably listening, you know, we're hearing you, but a part of us like, well, I mean, I would have never came in that much money in my life anyway. Mm-hmm. So, but trust part, because last week we had Dr. Mark Shug on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, had him talk specifically to the teachers.
Whoa.
And, you know, the education system and the financial companies that come do a lot of the same practices that got you.
Yep.
They're doing it on a nationwide level to teachers, to educators, to professors.
Yes.
I literally one generation of a move from my parents fully trusting their company to provide for them, i.e. a pension.
Mm.
You know, we are coming from a generation of trust. Work hard, get with a good team,
right.
Get with a good company. You're going to be good. Work for the government.
Right.
You're going to be set, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people are realizing when they did away with the pensions and started making you, you know, responsible for your portfolio, or even brought in these legal sharks to put you in stuff over here that benefits them and their fees, you're not even making enough return to have any money left over for you. I think it's eating us all up. And so I just wanted to make that connection to say, you know, thank you, because you know, we all have had stories of trusting somebody to do the best for us and realizing, you know, you got to start trusting and educating yourself, because you're the only one that really don't have your best interest at heart.
Well, to kind of piggyback off of that, there's nothing wrong with trusting people, but you should trust yourself more so that you can get you can kind of be the
know how to answer
firewall.
That question.
Right, yeah,
right.
You know what questions to answer. You know, just know what you don't know. Know your limits, because I'm not a lawyer. So if I need a lawyer,
right.
I need to trust a lawyer to handle my situation. I know that I'm going to do my own little due diligence and find out what I don't know so that I know why I'm hiring the lawyer. And so you know, then you could tell the lawyer, hey, look, okay, I know this, but I need you to help me with this. This is what I really want. This is what I really need. And this is, you know, these are the kind of my boundaries. And so there's nothing wrong with that. I want to make that clear, and that there are some good, and I know quite a bit of financial advisors for some reason. They still keep coming, not to kind of pitch me, but they're just in my life.
Right.
And they, you know, they break off from these big institutions and tell me the same story why. And they're just like, they are gouging people. I had to get out because One, I was handcuffed, and I had to do what they told me to do. I had to sell insurance when I don't want to sell insurance. I had to sell insurance to these people who don't, this family that don't need insurance. But I've got to sell it to them because that's what the theme of the quarter was, that they needed to push, the product that they needed to push. And so I had to do it. And so they felt like salesmen, so they branch off and do their own things. And so it just kind of reinforces, like, why I'm doing what I'm doing. But also the importance of knowing and understanding what you need to know going forward in the industry, because that there are people still doing that on a much, much larger scale, by the way.
Than we realize.
Yeah, I wanted to just interject something. I'm not sure who the person was I ended up asking the question of Nal earlier about the education and the things that changed. And I'm not sure if Bob is on, but I just wanted to just share a quick story about Bob's commitment to educating a lot of the athletes, especially young athletes. And a few years ago, a group of us, I think it was four of us, flew to the headquarters of the NFL with this program that Bob had, only to come to the realization that as an institution, that is not a priority.
They wouldn't let them in.
No.
They don't want to.
We got in the building, but no, they're not interested. So I just want to go back to the person who asked the question to make sure they understand the game, not the game of the sport we're talking about, but the game that's being played on our professional athletes. They want to keep them in the dark because an educated investor is the worst player. Okay, and so I want to make sure that that person asked that question understand why we're doing this program, why we're having people come on and share their investing story. This is huge. When we all began to understand the power of a $20 bill compounded over 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years can yield you six figures. But as Nal just shared with us, you must educate yourself. And if you're interested in having more information, you can connect with us at betterinvesting.org. No matter where you're listening to this program from, the organization is a not-for-profit organization, and they have chapters all across the United States. So there's no reason for anybody who's listening to this podcast to use not knowing as an excuse. Invest in yourself first. So back to you, Ione, as we prepare to wrap up. And Nal, this has been phenomenal. You know, we're going to have you come back.
Oh, for sure. Anytime.
Absolutely. Ione.
Well, that's actually all that I have, Nal. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate all of the stories and the advice that you shared. If you want to leave people with one thing that they should do, what would it be?
I'm going to leave everyone with three things that they should do.
That works.
One is live on less than you earn. Live on less than you earn. Okay? Two, only seek the advice from those competent enough to give it. Okay? I.e., a lawyer is competent enough to tell me about law. I don't need a lawyer to tell me about agriculture or stocks, okay? And the last thing is learn how to pay yourself. Learn how to pay yourself. Learn how to make the money pay you. Because it's not something that you should hoard. Money is an economic energy, right? Use it to its greatest capabilities and maximize the potential of it. And that potential is paying yourself, rewarding yourself for doing that. And that's it. You know, I thank both of you all for having me on and your assistants and the staff that are working on this, Better Investing for doing this for so long and having individuals like yourselves involved I call this boots on the ground work. You know, like you guys are having conversations about it. And that is a huge start. Just knowing that it's something that everyday people have to talk about. It's not left up to people that we hear about on TV or Buffett or anybody like this. It's everyday people. It could be your neighbor to have a discussion about this with and open up conversation and learn and be open to learning. And so thank you both, thank you all for having me on. It's been a pleasure, and I definitely look forward to being back.
Absolutely. Ione, did you want to do your favorite book this week also, or shout out to anybody before we wrap up?
Well, it's a little late, but I want to give a shout out to Ida that came on. She was one of my advisors for the stock market game. So, Ida, you want to say something?
Yes, I tried to. I cannot use the video, but anyway, I will say that I participated in a 10-week game with, there was probably a couple hundred kids, but I had four kids aging from 11, 14, 16, 19, participating in actual trading, pilot training, but trading their favorite stocks. Tesla, Nike, Apple, Ultra Cosmetics. And they were really invested in it because they could see their own products that they love to buy. They could see how the market fluctuates, where the real money is. And it's not on our feet and it's not on our face. It's investing it. At the end of the 10 weeks, my team happened to come in third place. Woohoo! But I wanted to say, I asked the four young ladies, what would they do if they had $1,000 today? If I gave you $1,000, what would you do with it? One of them said she would spend $500 on her new business because now she was very motivated to get started in making money to invest. And then she would invest $500 in the TikTok stock. She says, I'm on TikTok stock. I might as well go ahead and spend some money on it. Another one who was only 11 years old, she said she was going to use $400 and put it into a CD to make sure that she didn't spend it, $300 on a clothing business, and the remaining $300 she was going to buy some stock. And then the last young lady, she said she was going to buy a CD of some stock and then spend $400 on herself because this was a lot of work over 10 weeks logging in. But we did. We learned some great lessons. One of the things is we were meeting every day, every week at 6 o'clock. But what was happening is we were missing the actual market when it was open. So we learned we had to wait a whole week to find out what happened with our transactions. And we shifted that to like 11:30 in the morning so we could see what's really happening. Mm-hmm. And our most expensive lesson was we purchased 100 shares of Tesla stock because we had $100,000 to spend, and we put in a limit versus a market. And the transaction didn't go through for a whole week, and guess what? We lost $20,000 just in that simple mistake. So thank goodness it was play money, but that was a big lesson for the advisors and the kids. So guess what? We purchased everything on market from there on out, and it was a great experience. So the kids felt what we felt because that was a lot of money to lose, play money or real money. But anyway, it was a good experience, but I'm very happy that the kids at 11 years old, 16 years old, could actually go and make transactions. And the end result is they came in third place. They also were gifted with a credit union account with some nice rewards in their credit union account. And I also open a Charles Schwab account so I can purchase all those stocks that I was playing with in pilot. Yeah. So thank you for listening to me. It's very exciting, and I hope that the pilot game, stock market game, takes off.
Thank you, Ida. That's an amazing. That brings up another big point that I also didn't learn that I still my mentor made me do was paper trade. Like, you need to open up a demo account first before, because me and the position that I'm in, I'm like, oh no, I want real money. Like, no, let's start making let's do this now. Like, that's that easy. I could just hit that button and it does that. Paper trade. Get you a demo account first. See how that thing moves. Watch that account go down $20,000. See how it feels. And even then, it's still different than having real money. But that is one of the best lessons that, that he gave me, was making me trade consistently on a demo account using the tools that he's taught me and the techniques that he's taught me. So thank you, Ida, for sharing that and also being a leader and a guide for those young women.
Yeah, I'll just end by saying this. One of the things that I realized is that even though this stock market game, we really tailored it for the kids, we, especially the Black community, we're improving entire communities, because many of the advisors were like Ida or didn't even have the wherewithal like Ida. Many had never even invested before as advisors. And so this whole educational process of the curriculum and the managing of the portfolio ended up helping both the adults and the students. And so that's is really kind of like the caveat, one of those unexpected gifts that I think that this thing, as we continue to roll it out year after year, we will be able to uplift entire communities, not just the next generation.
Yes.
And families. And families also.
Yeah. Yeah.
And families. All right, everybody. Well, the time is well invested. We want to remind everybody again and thank everybody for participating in My Investing Story. And if you're joining us for the very first time, we're here every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on My Investing Story, and you can join us at our Better Investing Facebook group, and that's Better Investing Southeast Florida Chapter. Ione, if you want to put information in the chat about the Model Club, if you're interested in doing that, or the chapter. And Michelle, if you have the link for the National Association Annual Conference, it's going to be held in Texas 2021. We want to continue to promote that, and we always want to give credit to our advisors, I'll call them that, and that's, you know, Bob Nguyen and the volunteers with Better Investing, and Mr. Yeager and his beautiful wife, so that we can continue to remind everybody that we're here as volunteers. If you're interested, all across the country, just go to betterinvesting.org and find a volunteer organization near you. All hearts and minds clear, Ione.
Good night.
Yeah. If you have any questions, they can just look me up on LinkedIn and send them to me, and I'll reply in a timely manner. I know there's probably a lot of questions that didn't get asked. So if you'd like, look me up on LinkedIn, and you can message me there.
Okay, spell it for them. We did put it in the chat, but spell it for them.
Nail Diggs, N-A-apostrophe-I-L, last name Diggs, D-I-G-G-S. It's on LinkedIn. I think I'm the only one on there that got that name.
Okay, perfect.
So it should be easy to find, and thank you all.
Perfect, perfect. And again, we want to thank everybody for joining us, and we will see you next time. So everybody, good night, and God bless.
God bless. Thank you.
Goodbye.